In November came wonderful news from France. Victories were the everyday talk, and then the armistice. The terms of the armistice included the surrender of the whole German fleet, or rather the internment of that fleet. It was always known as the surrender. The official name was internment, a difference which eventually allowed the Germans to sink their ships, possibly a very satisfactory solution of what might have been a difficult problem. Before the surrender of the enemy fleet, as it actually was, could take place, arrangements for the reception had to be made. A delegation of German naval officers arrived in one of their cruisers and anchored outside Inchkeith, from whence they were transported up harbour by the destroyer Oak to the Queen Elizabeth. It was foggy, and few in the fleet knew of the Oak's passing, nor could the Germans have seen anything of the fleet through which they passed. On the 19th, I was given the outline of what was due on the 21st. The Germans were to be met by the whole fleet. We in the destroyers, our numbers had now grown to 120, were to be 50 miles ahead. At the same time, I was informed His Majesty the King would inspect the destroyer ships' companies, drawn up ashore in Port Edgar at 9:30 the following morning. This was the second occasion on which we had been paid a visit by the King. On the first, I was still in command of the 13th. Now the arrangements had to be made to parade some 8,000 men at short notice, and at the same time get out the orders for meeting the Germans. The printing press was kept busy, and that same evening everyone had a copy of the orders for the review, and by noon the next day those for the surrender. I confess to being rather proud of the latter. It was a subject without precedent. Time was pressing if the printers were to have a chance, and the orders stood the test in every detail. We had our own printing press in the Castor. Such was the congestion in the ship that the only place we could find to put it was in a reserve oil bunker. Here the two Royal Marine printers worked almost incessantly and never failed us. The review went off splendidly, not without a few anxious moments. The scene was all set. HM was due to arrive by car, the C&C by boat from the Queen Elizabeth. One can imagine it was a busy morning for the latter. He was a few minutes late. As I met him, I said, "You are late, sir." 10 to 1 we'll do it," he cried, and started running across the parade ground towards the gate where the King's car was now close. He soon gave in. Perhaps the thought of the C&C legging it down the ranks was too much for him, or perhaps the bellows gave out. Anyway, he said, "You run on and tell them I'm coming." I arrived as the King stepped out of his car, with just enough breath to explain that the C&C had been detained and was on his way. After His Majesty had walked round the ranks, I asked him if he would say a few words to the men, which he readily consented to do, and made a really inspiring impromptu speech, which, as may be imagined, was tremendously appreciated by us all. The King had, as usual, a long day ahead of him. It had been so much impressed on me that I must keep up to time that we were early, and the C&C said, "You're ahead of time. What are you going to do?" We were walking towards the Oak, on which ship he was to embark for transport to the Queen Elizabeth. The Admiral hurried off to his barge in order to be there to receive him. I had to say, I'm sorry, sir, but we are 5 or 10 minutes ahead of time." His Majesty replied, "Thank God for that. Let's have a cigarette." He produced a cigarette case, and I found myself smoking a cigarette with the King, sheltering from view round the corner of a workshop, while he asked me questions and told me stories, which are perhaps even now better not repeated. His Majesty was very naturally in great spirits that day. He must, too, have had a wonderful memory, For years afterwards, when at odd times I had the honour of speaking to him, he always remembered me in connection with Port Edgar and the destroyers.